Welcome into the Seminole Rap Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Peller, and I think we've got a pretty cool episode for you today. I kind of teased it a little bit at the end of our last show. We're talking basketball and baseball. Basketball getting into the thick of conference play, baseball closing in on first pitch. Team that looks maybe ready to make a run to Omaha. We'll see. If you're like me, just getting around to these seasons maybe, or the six-game win streak for basketball brought you in, hoping this episode can get you caught up. Everything you need to know, hopefully make you a little bit of a smarter fan too. So to do that, we're bringing our smart guys in here from Tomahawk Nation on both teams for Hoops. That's Matt Minnick. Matt, thrilled to have you here, dude. Thanks for being on.
Yeah, glad to be here.
I think it may be my second time on Seminole Rep. I don't know. I think I maybe talked with Tim or John one time before, but happy to join and ready to talk some hoops.
Yeah, I just started on Seminole Rap in August, so this is definitely our first time together. So excited to talk basketball. It's definitely I don't know. Yeah, they've all heard that I'm an LSU guy, and we're not normally good at hoops. So I've always loved basketball. I used to coach it, so I'm excited to talk it. So if you're new here, just catching into the basketball season. Quick recap: slow start, 7-5. Some potential bad loss, narrow aversion at home to Boston University and Tulane. A couple blowout losses, Florida, Purdue, Wake Forest. They then rattled off six straight in conference to take the top of the ACC. Then they lost again and by double digits Wednesday night at Georgia Tech. So right now, 13-6, 6-3 in conference. Matt, I'll just start with what we've seen so far. What happened at the beginning of the year to kind of get it off to a rough start? And what exactly did they I guess, figure out that got them kind of back in the mix?
Yeah, it's an interesting question
because certainly the record wasn't all that good to start the season. And look, you know, the last, we'll call it 5 years, has been possibly the best five-year stretch, probably the best five-year stretch in Seminole basketball history, not just under Leonard Hamilton, but in total history. I mean, going to multiple Sweet 16s, an Elite Eight, and the best team of all didn't even get to play in the NCAA tournament, a team that would have likely been a one or a two seed and a favorite to go to the Final Four. And you know, looking back now with the hindsight of perspective, you know, that team had four or five NBA players on it. So it's coming into this season, if you're a listener to the Tomahawk Nation podcast, the Hoops Dedicated podcast from Michael Rogner and I, which I know there's been some interest in having another one, and I think we're going to be able to get another one out there soon. But, you know, we even talked about coming in that, look, there was some potential on this team if everything went right, if the transfers had the kind of impact that they would need to have as first-year players, if the recruits lived up to expectations, and if health stayed, you know, 100%, that this team had perhaps a fairly high ceiling, but that the floor for this team was also a lot lower than what it has been for previous years, mostly because they weren't, you know, they weren't going to be getting their major contributions from either NBA lottery picks, Devin Vassell, Patrick Williams, Scotty Barnes, right? Or very established seniors, right? Terrence Mann, Trent Forrest, who, by the way, are both also in the NBA. but, you know, seniors, so they weren't going to be getting contributions from either of those. They're going to be getting contributions from freshmen or first-year players, or seniors who, you know, yeah, they've been on the team for a while, but they're not NBA talent level seniors. They're role players that have done a nice job filling those roles, but they're not going to be starting for the Clippers. So the variance coming into the season was higher than normal. And I think that we've seen that inconsistency play out. Now to your question, well, they started off rough. The reality is, I don't know that they have actually played much better lately. They've maybe played easier teams. The best team they've played all year was Purdue. They played that game on the road, got predictably blown out. You know, okay, the second best team was maybe Duke. That game was at home, and we typically match up fairly well with Duke's stylistically and you know, physical. We're typically more physical. But probably the third best team they've played was Florida, also on the road and early in the season, and got blown out. Maybe you could say Wake Forest was the third best team. Well, what happened in that game was a blowout. So they kind of, when they've played pretty good teams, they haven't really fared all that well. When they've played teams that are average or worse, you know, some games they've been able to pull out close wins and some games they've been able to, you know, they've lost close. And I think what you saw over the 6-game winning streak was just the ball bouncing the right way. And they were getting wins as opposed to losses, but they weren't actually playing all that better.
Yeah. And I that makes sense. I guess in the basketball world, I went and looked earlier at some of their like advanced numbers, and they don't look bad. They just look basically middle of the road across the board. Defensively, I guess a little better than offensively. I guess much better offensive per their numbers. But the one area that only kind of stands out is maybe their 3-point defense percentage isn't great over expected. But there's nothing that stands out like this is a bad team. And there's nothing that stands out that says this is a good team. And I guess when your margin for error is that type of slim, that's where you kind of see the variance and the ability to rattle off big wins. And then when you play the good teams, that's kind of, I guess, where we're at with this team.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team that, you know,
if shots are fault. If they're making some threes and really if they're getting turnovers, there's probably one thing that this team does at an elite level, and that is force turnovers. If they're forcing turnovers and able to start getting into a rhythm early in the shot clock on offense, then yeah, I think, you know, you see them have halves like they had against Miami in the first half, where they were up 43-19 or something like that, or like the second half against Duke, or actually even perhaps the best game they've played all year was kind of early in the season. It was a neutral court win over Missouri. Again, you know, Missouri is not a great team, but they're probably better than the Georgia Tech team that just blew out Florida State, and Florida State won that Missouri game by, you know, 25 points or thereabouts. You know, that was a pretty good game, and what they were able to do in that game was force Missouri into a turnover on 25% of their possessions. So when Florida State's been able to do that, they've been successful. When they haven't been able to force turnovers, or when their shots aren't falling, like against Syracuse the first game, they had probably the worst shooting night I've ever seen Florida State have in the Tucker Center, or certainly one of the top five worst nights. I guess there was a few bad years back in the Steve Robinson eras, but you know, look, it's a game of make a shot, miss a shot. And if you're going 4-for-30 from the perimeter, you're probably not going to win the basketball game. Yeah. But you know, it's interesting. It's actually interesting that you said, oh, well, the defense seems a little bit of the offense. And here's some actual stats to throw at you that kind of even question, are we actually playing that better? This is on Bart Torvik, which is a free site. You can go and actually you can manipulate the data to look at it by dates. And so if you look at from the first game of the season to December 31st, Florida State had a 6-4 record, but they were actually playing at what Torvik would say they were the 42nd best team in the country during that time span, even though they had a 6-4 record, and their defense was 25th in the country during that time span. If you look at from January 1st to today, their record is 7-2, right? 7-2 compared to 6-4. But instead of being the 42nd best team in the country during that time span where they're 7-2, they're actually 86th in the country. And their defense, instead of being 25th, is 108th, actually slightly worse than the offense. And what's really been the biggest difference maker is that on January, the first game after January 1st, I think it was maybe like the third or the fourth, we played NC State and Malik Osborne hurt his ankle, and he's been playing on one leg ever since. And the team, he's not even starting games anymore. And despite finding ways to win, we have looked very vulnerable with an injured Malik Osborne.
Yeah, it certainly changes the game. And one thing I think that maybe could play part of that too in that time frame is right around the start of conference play. I mean, the first against NC State, the ACC isn't really anything like you would normally see from the ACC. It feels like Duke and a bunch of other teams, even though Duke has, I mean, obviously Florida State got them in overtime, and then I think a 1-point loss to Miami also. But it just seems like kind of the conference as a whole is any given day can kind of bounce any direction.
That's right. I would say,
you know, most of the metrics would have the Atlantic Coast Conference as you know, the sixth best conference in the country this year, which is not anything close to what, you know, is typical ACC standards. And I think you can make an argument that it might even be closer to set. I don't know. It depends on what you feel about the Mountain West or the West Coast Conference, you know, where Gonzaga's out there, St. Mary's, San Francisco, which is actually pretty good this year. So it's not a good conference. And you're right. It's like, well, we're not playing. Let's say at best, we're playing about the same in the 7-2 stretch as we were in the opening 6-4 stretch. I think stats might show we're playing worse, but what have you done in that stretch? Well, you beat a average NC State team on the road, but in a game where, I mean, NC State's also had injuries and has had some of their key contributors out. You beat a Louisville team who just fired their coach. You beat Miami by one twice, and probably could have lost either of those games. You beat Syracuse, who is probably on the way to firing or forcing a resignation of their coach, right? You beat North Florida, and you beat you had a good win against Duke, where they were Florida State, as it does a few, you know, Tucker Magic was able to pull it out late in overtime, which, you know, you don't go to overtime against Leonard Hamilton.
That's right.
So it's like what actually was accomplished in those games, and you have a blowout loss to Wake and a blowout loss to Georgia Tech. It's not a lot of heft on that resume.
Yeah, and looking even just to look at the game scores, I mean, it's 2-point win, 22-point loss, 9-point win, 1-point win, 5-point win, 1-point OT win. I'm going to skip the North Florida game because it doesn't really fit in the ACC schedule. The 1-point win against Miami, and then the 14-point loss. I mean, their wins are razor thin, one bounce type difference, like you've talked about. I mean, they're not getting out of conference play here. Obviously, the rest of the year, I guess. No, they're not.
Florida was a makeup game, so
yeah. They're not rescheduling that UCF game, which could, you know, play into the numbers, I guess, towards the end. It's not going to get easier. It's going to be that same level of competition, and from what I've seen looking towards March and the tournament, it seems like the sweet spot number for them to kind of feel good about where they're at is seems to be 20-21. So you're at 13, and I feel like you'd like to be higher than that. Quick count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're about 11 left. I mean, you're gonna have to go, I guess, is it 7-4? Is it 8-8 somewhere in that range? 7-4, 8-3? Is that a doable thing? I mean, you do have Duke on here, which at this point at Duke almost feels like an auto loss, but they did just beat them. So I don't want to say that, but I don't know. I 21, 20 feels like the range, but looking at it, it seems tougher now that I'm looking at the numbers to try to make them make sense. They do have the tournament to help out.
Yeah, they've got the tournament.
And you're right. I mean, you kind of counted off those wins. I mean, look, we're still in a sport that, despite the fact that the committee is going to put a lot of emphasis on more emphasis on metrics than they did 10 or 15 years ago, which is a shame because there was actually a few years when Florida State had some phenomenal metrics, but they didn't get in because it was an outdated model. And those teams probably would have done some significant damage with Al Thornton and some others. But yes, metrics are important. Quad one, quad two wins are important. Florida State's still getting wins. So let's make no mistake, beating Miami 61-60 and 65-64 is better than losing by 1 point. So they have at least put themselves in the position to make a run. Now, what is it actually going to take? I'd say 7 more ACC wins feels like a minimum of being in contention. And it's not even so much that you need, I mean, you do need the wins, but what you really need is you need to avoid more bad losses. They've already got the quad three loss at home to Syracuse. They just picked up a quad three loss on the road to Georgia Tech, and South Carolina is currently quad three. It could, you know, that one was like a neutral site game, so that they maybe could sneak into that quad two, which would help. But bottom line is there's already several bad losses on the resume. And the thing is that the ACC is so bad that if you don't win 7 more of your games, just looking at the schedule, if you lose more than, so there's 11 left. If you lose more than 4, odds are that means you're starting to pick up bad losses. There's only so many, like, okay, let's say they lose a Duke. Let's say they lose at North Carolina. That's not a terrible loss. Let's say they lose at Clemson. That's, you know, from a metric standpoint, not a terrible loss. They're actually probably going to be underdogs anyways. And let's say you lose at home to Notre Dame. None of those are terrible losses. But if you're like, okay, well, we're going to start losing more, well, where are those going to come from? At Boston College, home to Clemson, Pittsburgh? Like, these are going to be bad losses. So if they win less than seven more of the 11 remaining regular season games, unless one of those wins is at Duke, I'd say that they'd have to make a run probably to the ACC tournament finals.
Yeah.
They can get seven. You're right there on the cut line going into the tournament. You probably can't lose your first game, because chances are if you lose your first game, it's going to be a bad loss. If you can get eight, if you can go 8-3 the rest of the way, which, as bad as the ACC is, all it takes is Florida State getting hot from three for 2 weeks. Yeah. So if you win eight the rest of the way, I'd say you probably feel pretty solid. Even with a loss in the ACC tournament, winning eight games means that some of those are probably going to come against the Wakes, the at Clemson, the at North Carolina, or something like that. So, you know, you'd feel pretty solid about that.
Is there anything you think they can do to help them get there? Is there something, when you look at the team, how they play with the roster lineup changes, is there anything that you think could make this six game win streak into a reality? I guess is probably, like, obviously it happened already, but what can make it real? The improvements real? Is there something there?
They've got to keep finding ways to force turnovers, and they've got to capture the magic that they played with on defense in the Duke game and in the first half of the road Miami game. And even in, like, that Missouri game that I talked about and stuff, where they're playing as a cohesive unit. I think with Malik Osborne hurt, I think that makes it more challenging. Like, part of me would say you just need to sit him for 2 weeks, yeah, and get him healthy, if Florida State lost two of its next three and you said, well, look, now we just got to make a run in the tournament. Like, right, at that point, you just need to get Malik healthy, because all you're playing for is a run in the tournament. I'd like to see Cameron Fletcher play more. I think he is in that Devin Vassell mold, where he's disruptive on, he maybe is a little out of control at times, but he just causes chaos on defense. And our best offense is defense. So I'd like to see him get some more run. I'd like to see Raekwon Evans be he was critical in that six-game winning streak. He hit game-winning free throws against Miami. He hit the game-tying shot against Duke to send it to overtime. He hit a big shot late in the game, in the second game against Miami. He hit a shot against Syracuse. So he had a bad game against Georgia Tech. Maybe he was sick. Maybe it was just a bad game. You know, these guys are, you know, amateurs. It happens. He's got to step up and play like he was during the six game stretch. And then you're going to have some, you know, some of the younger guys, the Cleveland, the Worleys. I mean, they're going to have to start grasping the defensive principles. If we're going to need John Butler's 3-point shooting, if we're going to need Jalen Worley's kind of vision and ball handling, if we're going to need Matt Cleveland there in the center, play him a small ball a little bit, they're going to have to be able to grasp the defensive principles such that we're not, you know, leaving guys wide open from three. It's not even so much that, you know, my partner, Mike Rogner, partner on the podcast, has talked a lot about 3-point defense. Once the shot leaves his hand, it's largely luck of whether it goes in or not. But what the research says is that, are you preventing the shot from being taken? Because most threes that are taken are open. Guys don't, unless it's late in the shot clock, they just don't jack up contested threes. So are you there on the catch to the point that you're actually preventing the shot from being attempted? And where Florida State has really struggled this year, you look at KenPom, we are 327th in the country at three-point attempts compared to field goal attempts on defense, which means that teams are feeling they're getting open looks regardless of whether they're making them or not. We're not ready on the catch to defend it.
Dude knows his stuff. If you couldn't tell already, Matt knows what he's talking about. If you haven't, if you're not already checking it out, go ahead and listen to him and Ragnar. A new episode coming soon, probably shortly after this one, maybe in the next couple days.
Yeah, I think I'd say maybe as soon as Saturday, but we should have another one dropping soon.
Yeah, definitely check him out. You guys are smart. He clearly knows his stuff big time. Matt, thanks for having you, man. Yeah, thanks for coming on. From the chase to make March Madness to the race for Omaha, we go ahead and turn now to the man who eats, sleeps, breathes this program, Brett Nevitt. I'm sure you've seen his writing on our site covering all the sports, but the dude is just all over baseball. Couldn't go to anybody else to talk preseason baseball with. So, Brett, excited to have you on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to get started and get into baseball season finally on February 18th.
I know, finally almost here. We're under a month, and it finally feels really close. That opening Friday night, I'm sure, is inching closer. Is it a Friday, or they open on a Thursday?
Yeah, Friday.
Of course. Well, if you don't follow him already, make sure you do on Twitter, BrettPN, at BrettPN. And then make sure you're listening to the Sunday Gold podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. That's, you know, Apple, Spotify, wherever it is. Wherever you got this one, I'm sure it's there. First ever podcast for FSU baseball. And these guys do a great job. I mean, I know you guys have got a lot of one-on-ones over the off season and just a lot of cool content during the year. So what else do people really have to look forward to there? And what are you guys working on before we really jump into our preseason chat?
Yeah, once we really get into preseason practices, which start on Friday, we'll probably start doing weekly podcasts, ramping up towards the season. And we'll keep doing our countdown series with more players, probably talk to Alex Terrell, Parker Messick, a few of those guys that will be the key to the season. So if you listen to Sunday Golds and head over there, you'll get a lot heading into the season. And then once we hit the season, pretty much every weekend, whenever we're playing, you'll be able to hear us and our thoughts and preview and everything. So looking forward to getting back to it with Ario as well.
Yeah, I know I jumped in. I think I started with Tomahawk Nation around April last year. So when I jumped in, I was one of the first things like, well, I got to get into baseball and catch up on everything so far. And you guys were quick to help me pick up. So even if you're just like, yeah, let me check out baseball this year, I think it's a pretty good year to do so. I mean, again, just like always, the expectations are high around the program, right? Preseason, they seem to be top 15 basically across the board. Disappointing end to last year with the regional exit where, I mean, it seemed like they were kind of underseeded. But, you know, heading into this year, you got a lot to build on. If you're a Noles fan, what is it that should get you excited about this year?
Yeah, well, it's obviously the pitching staff. I mean, you're top in the ACC last year, and you're bringing back more than 50% of your guys from last year. And obviously you have Parker Messick, and he's Parker Messick, and you just always know what you're going to get from him. And he's a bulldog, and just love watching him pitch. And Bryce Hubbard, I think, is going to take a next step here. And I think he's a guy that can go in the first round of the draft. And he'll be back on Saturdays. Sunday, they obviously have, you know, Carson Montgomery is just, you know, the person that most people think that's going to be in there, and he's certainly got a good chance. But they got a handful of guys just because of the staff that they have that, you know, they could really just pick out anyone from the staff and they'd work out for them. But they're still got a little bit of a ways to go there through preseason on that decision. But just that whole staff in general, I mean, it's so deep. It's got so many different looks. It's just so many, you got lefties, righties, power arms. You got a couple arms that will come in and just pitch to the zone, and they can do a lot of different things. And they're just really excited about that. And I really don't, they're probably one or two in the nation with that staff.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of chatter that you know, this is an Omaha level staff and obviously led by Messick. It's a guy you want to get out to the park and see pitch while you can. It's one of those guys I'm sure you'll see for years to come and be like, yeah, I remember the Parker Messick years when you see him, you know, on the Rockies or whatever. Like it's a name that'll stand out for a while. So if you're, you know, hey, I don't know what to do this weekend, that might be a good player to go check out. Obviously one of the things behind pitching staff is the defense that'll elevate you a lot. You know, I know you've talked about it a bunch. It's been an issue for the last couple of years. They were better. Where do you think Mike Martin Jr. feels about that level, that realm of the team?
Yeah, there's probably a lot less anxiety for them this year going in. You know, last year they were improved from the last couple of years, but it wasn't hard to really improve off the last couple of years and what they had been. But they want to be a good defensive team going forward, and they want to be more athletic going forward. You know, last year they really had probably like five question marks in the field at all times, and, you know, outfield defense with some injuries and just, you know, guys that aren't super fast. It was tough sometimes. Infield defense, there was a lot of ups and downs, and Nander really struggled at the end of the year. And things just kind of started to spiral with defense at the end of the year. But, you know, this year I think they feel very shored up there. They did a good job in the portal. Infield defense is shored up with Jordan Carrion, the Florida transfer at shortstop. And it's a real, real talent defensively, really special. I mean, they rave about him all the time. At first base, Alex Terrell, he's not a guy with a bunch of range. And, you know, he's coming in for the power, but he's very good around the base and making infielders look better, which what they struggled with last year at first base, sometimes defensively. Brett Roberts, don't know exactly where he's going to play yet, second or third. He's really going to hit, though, but just on defense, always stick on that. You know, he's just another athletic guy that can cover a lot of ground and do a lot of things for them. Out in the outfield, you know, they'll be a lot better and more athletic and just be able to cover more ground. So overall, they just feel like they'll be able to help out the pitching staff even more this year and you know, really play some better, like, I guess, defensively better metrics, because the fielding percentage wasn't terrible last year. It can definitely be better, but they need to be better at saving some runs for those pitchers.
Any concerns replacing Matthew Nelson behind the plate in terms of that, I guess, the bat itself and then the defensive level too with the pitching staff?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, no one's going to be able to replace Matt Nelson and step into those shoes. I mean, he was as good as it gets last year, and I really don't think there was a better position player in college baseball, and he deserved every bit of praise he got. But, you know, Florida State, they're going to try to make up for his loss by profiling better at other positions. You know, for example, Terrell at first base, and if you can just make up for it in other positions, I mean, catcher – even at the MLB level, it's not often that they're a good offensively. So they're going to go with a team approach behind the plate most likely. And, you know, I think they think that they'll be able to, you know, do well behind the plate defensively. Colton Vinson and Brock Mathis. Mathis is a Oklahoma State transfer they brought in, that, and both those guys are pretty reliable behind the plate. And I think at the plate, they'll go a bit more of a team approach, and, you know, none of them are going to hit 300 plus with 20 plus homers like Matt did, but I think they think with the guys they have and, you know, being able to bounce off each other and learn off each other, that they'll be able to, you know, be sufficient and not get the team underwater there and just be able to, you know, help the pitching staff out and keep those guys going.
Yeah, and it's a lot of new faces across, I guess, the field, right? And they basically overhauled the bench, I guess.
Yeah,
really, I guess, the starting lineup too.
Yeah, most of the starting lineup is new. I think it's 18 newcomers or maybe even more now because they've added a couple more recently. But, yeah, they needed a roster overhaul. Last year, the biggest issue with the team was, you know, they had a couple – you know, contact was a problem definitely. But I just think the biggest issue was their depth last year. They just – guys had to play every day. They really couldn't ever give guys rest. And, you know, when guys were struggling, they couldn't ever give them that mental break they needed. You know, a little bit had to do with Reese Albert's injury. You know, Baz Jimenez got hurt as well. He was as a freshman catcher. But this year they'll just have much more depth, and that allows them to do more things that they want to do in the field, on the bases, at the plate. You know, they brought in a top 10 class of newcomers between transfers and freshmen. And I really like a lot of the freshman position players they brought in. You know, some of those guys aren't going to be day one amazing players, but they're going to be guys that can hit the field and be better than what you had last year on your second level. And, you know, I just think everywhere, about almost every single position this year, that they're better depth wise than they were last year.
Is there a feel yet? You know, I here we are still 3 weeks before the start of the season, but on what we're looking at, I guess, in the ACC overall, which teams, I guess, should we flag as, like, you know, teams to look out for in that race for the ACC?
Yeah, well, obviously Notre Dame last year was the team, and they were, you know, I think they ended up winning the ACC by 4 games in the regular season. First off, I got to mention them. They did lose a lot of big names, but I just think Link Jarrett's got a really good thing going on there, and they're doing a good job there, and they'll keep pumping out guys, and they always get more than they should out of that, of their roster. I think Georgia Tech is another team that should be at the top. You know, Duke is expected to be a much better team this year. They brought in a really good freshman class and have some talented arms there. You know, Miami's got even more new faces than FSU. They've got almost a whole new roster, but they've got a lot of young talent there too. So they're one that's kind of up in the air, but they could definitely, you know, rise to the top at some point. And then you got just everybody else seems to be just middle of the pack, just bunched up. But I think it's going to be a really good league this year, and a really deep league this year. I think last year was a bit of a down year, but for most of the season. But then at the end of the season, you saw teams like NC State come to life. You saw Virginia come to life. I mean, those programs will always come around by the end of the year and be playing strong baseball. So I think, but I do think Florida State will be in that top mix, especially with the pitching staff. It's just no one will be able to compete with the three guys they throw out there every single day, every weekend.
Yeah, and looking at their schedule, as I try to be schedule guy here and keep up with you, they do play NC State, Duke, Notre Dame, and Georgia Tech back-to-back-to-back-to-back weekend. So you kind of can figure out that important stretch of the season there from mid-March to mid-April where, you know, they're going to have a – hopefully you're peaking at that point and you can meet that challenge. But before we got on here, I was reading some of your other articles where they did get caught up. Last year was in midweek games, where that probably cost them some seating, the chance to host, the chance to, sending them to Oxford, which is not an easy place to ever go, especially as a three seed, where you end up, two, three really doesn't make much of a difference in a regional, but it's still not where they hope to be. Sitting in that preseason top 15, you're kind of hoping to host that regional. Looking it over myself, I didn't really see, I mean, obviously you have Florida on there, but I don't see too much in the way of midweeks to kind of help fix your schedule. It was in that RPI realm. Is there anything you think could hold them back there? Or do you think this is something that they know they need to fix going into this year?
Well, I think this year, last year was such a weird year with RPI, and ACC really screwed all ACC teams. I mean, you know, Notre Dame was a top five team in the country and they didn't even get a top eight seed because of how ACC schedule worked down at the 36 games, and everybody kind of just hurt each other. And then you really just had to take every single opportunity in the non-conference. And, you know, they just had a couple of blunders against Jacksonville. You know, they had one loss against Troy. Trying to think, they had a loss against, I want to say Stetson, I believe. I don't remember exactly for sure, but there were basically three losses that changed them from essentially a regional host to a three seed. I don't think every midweek game will hold as much ground this year as last year, but you know, they're going to have to take care of business and not have any quad four, quad three losses. I mean, basketball is dealing with that issue right now and Everybody's talking about it, but you know, I just think this schedule does set up really nice for them this year. I really like it. You know, you get Cal at home, you get TCU at home. I really like how Meat does a good job of ramping up from week one to week two to week three to ACC season. This is only the second full-time schedule we've got to have for Meat, but he does a really good job of putting them together and really making this team compete for, you know, 56 games. It's not any cupcakes, I don't think. And, you know, I really love the TCU's coming here, not early season, but in April. I mean, you're going to get both those teams when they're starting to peak and when they're playing their best ball. So, and that will be really fun. And like you said, I mean, the ACC schedule also sets up well for them, I think. They get most of their toughest opponents at home. So I think it's going to be a really fun year at Dick Houser for sure.
Anything I didn't ask you about that intrigues you for the year?
No, I'm just excited to, you know, see some new faces in the lineup. And, I really think that Alex Terrell will have a big year for them and kind of prove some people wrong. I know a lot of people have downplayed that ad for them. I mean, guy that hit 24 home runs 3 years ago in a single season. And I mean, you got the short porch and right field at Dick Houser, and, you know, Brett Roberts is really going to hit. Jordan Carrion's really going to play defense. I just really think that people should be really excited to see those three guys added to the lineup this year. And I think I got a piece coming up this Friday on those three guys, but that's just the only other thing I'd mention.
Cool. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer. I appreciate the time again. Check him out on Twitter. It's at Brett PN, and of course the Sunday Golds podcast, wherever you can find him, same place you found this one, Apple, Spotify, on and on. Appreciate you jumping on with us, Brett.
Thank you.